Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 542 for comics originally released on December 27th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Hawkman Found number 1, or as I'm tempted to refer to it, Hawkman Found number 1, Reader Lost 399. This is one of the Dark Knight's Metal tie-ins, I guess. When I drive home on the days we're going to record, I'm usually going through, it's like, oh, well, you know, let me get my thoughts in order. What do I want to say about these things? And for the other two, I could pretty much do that. For this one, I was racking my mind. It's like I read this a few days ago, a little earlier than usual, but I had a really hard time remembering what this was. This was in my mind, fairly forgettable issue, and it's not a bad issue, but it was a really lightweight issue story-wise, and even when I was going through and taking my notes as I was reading it, I was having a really hard time coming up with really much to say.
Yeah, I feel that because, you know, it's a Jeff Lemire book.
Is it?
Yeah, Jeff Lemire wrote this.
The reason I ask, if you go to the credits, it's Jeff Lemire who wrote it.
Yeah, I saw that. Looks like they dropped that. Is that the colorist or the letterer that screwed that up?
I'm going to go with the letterer and or assistant, associate, or regular editor.
Yeah. They dropped the ball on that. Maybe that's a good way to take your name off of something. Just take the I out of my name because I don't want anything to do with
it. The funny thing is there's a whole dot the I's, cross the T's kind of a thing for proofreading. And this is literally, not only did they not dot, they didn't have the I.
When it comes to creator-owned work and smaller publisher work, I don't think there's anybody better than Jeff Lemire.
Really?
The stuff that he's doing, Dark Horse with Black Hammer, the Royal City stuff he's doing, Descender. He's done a bunch of stuff for Valiant that's been well received. He's really, really talented. And when it comes to his big two work, a lot of it becomes a paint by the numbers, really kind of a boring, there's something missing. I can't put my finger on it, but it never really crackles as well as some of his other stuff. And I don't know if it's editorial control or it's his own self-imposed, guidelines that he limits himself. They just don't seem to be as good. There could be some exceptions that I'm missing that are obvious to those that are listening, and please let me know what I've forgotten. But if I'm thinking recently, the big two stuff just hasn't hit, and he's done really, really well with some of these smaller publisher works, and I don't know what the disconnect is.
I think for me, he's just on a different wavelength. A lot of his creator-owned stuff just isn't of interest to me and hasn't connected with me. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I'm not part of that target audience or something. I would agree that some of the work he's done over at Valiant and one or two of those other places and stuff has been good. He's not bad. He's got talent. But I would also agree that some of what he's doing, particularly at the Big Two, lacks that spark or whatever that he seems to have in some of those other works. With this, I don't want to place too much of the blame on him because it could have been as simple theoretically as DC or the powers that be over there saying, you know, we're doing this Dark Knight Metal thing and we're going to have Hawkman in it. We should do a Hawkman one shot. Let's go grab a writer and say, okay, do something with Hawkman. We'll give you a little extra page count. It'll be a $3.99 book or whatever. Just do something about the history. Have it be a little cryptic or whatever. Just at the end of it, we need Hawkman to be available for, you know, what's going on in Dark Knight Metal. And I can imagine any writer saying, oh, well, great, happy to do that. Can you tell me what's going on there? And them saying, well, you know, we don't want to give too much away. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying I can imagine that could have happened. Because this had the standard tie-in, do something that seems important enough for people to buy, but not so important it actually should have been in the series it's tying into. And there were one or two places here where it's talking about how Hawkman had gone to Challenger's Mountain and stuff had happened or whatever. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really make sense. Last we saw him, he was hanging with Adam Strange and he died off planet. And I mean, the art here by Brian Hitch is phenomenal as I would have expected, but the shallowness of the story, and I'm stretching to use the term story there. It's essentially we got a guy in a cave, there are other guys, and I'm like, well, based on how they look, maybe there are other incarnations of Hawkman or something, I guess. I don't know. And, you know, the whole mystery of Hawkman or whatever, it's like, okay, if there is any cryptic, mysterious character in the DC universe just by nature of publishing history, it is Hawkman. When editors at DC have in the past referred to the radioactivity of Hawkman because of his convoluted history and how often they had changed it at times and how they just got to put him on a shelf and kind of let people quietly forget what they'd done so they can bring him back out and try something else. he's a tough character to deal with. And this issue not only didn't answer any questions, it raised a couple of new ones like, wait, what the hell was going on? Didn't he just die and he's over at Challenger's Mountain? It's like, what the hell? And why publish this? I mean, to me, it kind of implies maybe they're leading towards a Hawkman series or at least a series with Hawkman in it. And I'd be cool with that. But there was nothing in here that made me think, wow, this is a deep character. Matter of fact, how much did this guy even, did he even speak in this issue?
I think, yeah, it was all voiceover boxes.
I think he grunted a time or two once. And, no, he tells somebody he's gonna kill them and whatnot. He had a few lines of dialogue in this oversized issue, and it is, in my opinion, almost the definitive, or epitome of kind of forgettable story.
Yeah, when I was reading it, and I was thinking, this reminds me of, the Secret Wars, Secret Empire tie-ins that, you know, Marvel was doing that maybe didn't really need to be done, but they were trying to, you know, kind of eke out a little more juice from some thread that was left somewhere in the main story. And so I just felt like DC's version of that. And
fairness, DC has done this before. They've had crossovers that are tie-ins that were tangential at best as far back as Crisis.
Oh, and yeah.
The whole phrase of a Red Sky tie-in is, you've got, yes, something that says, oh, ties into Crisis on Infinite Earths. And there's like one panel that somebody's looking up saying, why is the sky red?
Yes, this is not their first foray into these sort of loose tie-ins that really might not have a real function in the, mm-hmm, in the readership.
Still doesn't make it any better.
No.
This is one that, man, I was hoping for, you know, what's going on with Hawkman? What direction do they want to take the character? Something. And this whole dark universe stuff that they're building up is frankly getting a little less and less interesting to me the more and more they reveal of it. It's not bad. It's not even a bad concept. It's just one that it's a bit more dystopic and whatnot than I would like for them to do. And I'd like for them to explore the positive side of the multiverse or whatever. For me, though, this was as beautiful as the artwork was, and it was indeed terrific. It was something that, within days, I had completely spaced on the contents of, and my only recollection of it before I realized, oh yeah, it was this Hawkman found thing, was I remember it looking nice and having no substance.
Yeah, it's a kind of a zero issue, and didn't mean much. I don't think it really adds anything to the metal event. If you're enjoying that, you don't feel obligated to go chase this thing down. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing here. No, there's really no meat on the bone. If you're a super fan of Hawkman, well, then you might enjoy this. There's nothing groundbreaking here. It's just a nice little story that is kind of forgettable.
But to me, it was a filling of space, and I didn't think there was a beginning, middle, and end of a story. I mean, was there a plot you can pull out of this?
I actually didn't realize it was a one-shot. I knew it was going to be connected in the next metal, but I thought maybe there would be a two after that it came back around to and told a little bit more Hawkman stuff. But
no.
So, it really did. It really was empty then.
Talk about a missed opportunity. This is a character that's got, convoluted though it may be, a deep history in the DC universe. They could have teased aspects of the JSA, of the Justice League. Hell, they could have even tossed out maybe there's going to be a future Hawkman of some sort in the Legion or something, and really just tantalized us with a bunch of stuff, or how important this guy is for some crazy reason in what's going on with the DC Universe. But all they basically did was establish, he's dead, and he's coming back. And I felt from the end of Dark Metal 4 or whatever, we kind of already knew that.
There is a vocal group of comic readers that want a JSA, want a Legion, and he could fit in either one of those, right?
He was certainly a JSA member. He's card-carrying member of that.
Yeah.
To me, it would be new ground for them to put him in the Legion. But if he is indeed immortal, as they keep telling us...
Why not?
I think that'd be a fascinating place to put him. Be, you know, you have to rework a few things or whatever, but, you know, hey, he's Thanagarian or whatever, so there's something about being from that planet that makes him special. The Legion, you have to have an actual superpower, which you could argue Hawkman does not, but I think you could work around that.
Now, you watch DC's Legends of Tomorrow on CW, correct?
Yes, I do.
Now, the Hawkman mythos on that, is that jive with the Hawkman in the comics that you've read?
In so much as... there is a period of time that it lines up with, yes. Was that always his backstory? No.
The meteor and the...
The meteor and stuff.
Immortalness.
And... They pulled in after the second or third take on Hawkworld. Because originally, Hawkman was a Egyptian archaeologist who discovered the wings, all that kind of a stuff. I forget the specifics of the Golden Age version. With the Silver Age, he was this policeman from another planet or whatever, of Thanagar.
Okay.
And then in the more recent Bronze Age, whatever, they kind of said, you know what, this is getting a little confusing, particularly after Crisis on Infinite Earths, and they, you know, was he originally a JLA member? Is he on both Earths? And now both Earths are one? How does that work? They kind of had this increasingly convoluted, well, the grandson, or the son of Hawkman was in the JLA, but it wasn't really his son, it was somebody posing as Carter Hall Jr., and no, that's not it, it's this, you know, and then... They completely revamped what Thanagar, the planet, was like. And then it got to the point where it's like, this is so damn confusing. There are so many takes on the character. Why not just, you know, kind of amp that up a little? Let's go toss in, you know, various hawk-themed characters from the West and the medieval times or whatever. And just say that they're all kind of incarnations of this guy. And tie it in that way. So they eventually got to the comics... what they wound up pulling from the comics for Legends of Tomorrow. Now, in there, they tied him to Vandal Savage. I don't think originally that was as tightly done. Again, I could be mistaken on that. It was an issue of the Hawkworld series where, and it may have been during Zero Hour, where they kind of established that there was all Hawkmen are this Hawkman.
Oh.
And it's like almost any aspect of comics continuity, if you try to explain it, it just doesn't make sense.
And at first, so that first issue of Metal touched on the archaeology origin then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the one they're going with now.
Well, this one's an archaeologist, but he's still the reincarnating version.
Gotcha, okay.
They're trying to have the best of both worlds. How do you deal with the fact that Hawkman, who's from a alien planet with high-tech stuff, goes around with a mace and clubs people over the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why go low school, old weaponry or whatever? Because he was always, again, almost a little anachronistic at times when he was with the Justice League and so forth. And again, that was something they really had to start dealing with more starting in the 70s when they would do JLA, JSA crossovers. Of now you've got two characters that are very similar. How do you start to differentiate them a little more? How do you, you know... go from the broad brushstrokes into a finer grain of detail for the characters.
Was he ever in Super Friends or the show that followed?
Absolutely.
Okay, I thought I remembered that.
He was one of the main ones in Challenge of the Super Friends and stuff like that.
But not the first incarnation, right?
Well, it was different seasons of the same show and they changed the name or whatever.
Okay.
The first season had Wendy and Marvin and stuff, and that was literally Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Robin would show up. And then Robin actually became an actual super friend when they got Zan and Jane and stuff like that. And then particularly when they got to Challenge of the Super Friends, that's when you would start seeing a lot of Hawkman, Flash, Green Lantern. By this point, Samurai, Apache Chief, A little later, you get El Dorado, kind of those ethnic minority heroes or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, on the one hand, were very token characters, but it's also kind of cool to give people of all ethnicities the sense that, yeah, they too can be a hero.
Have you watched them since their original airings?
Oh, yeah.
And you own them?
Yeah. I've got them on DVD.
How do they hold up?
Some better than others. Some are classic. Some are really cool. Others, it's, okay.
Diminishing returns as the series aged, the originals are better or the other way around?
I would say the first season's a little hard. This is back when they had Ted Knight doing a lot of the narration and stuff like that, and it was very cheesy stories.
Okay.
I think there's a sweet spot for me around Challenge of the Super Friends, just because you got like 13 heroes coming and going.
Yeah.
And then near the end, it's very much a mixed bag for me, because the last season, Galactic Guardians, I think it was, and I could be off a season or two on some of this, had more of a Jack Kirby influence. I'm not that big on the Fourth World, so that was not a plus. But it had both Firestorm and Cyborg, which was kind of cool. And it had Adam West as Batman by that point. At least I think it did.
Yeah.
So if you haven't checked out the old stuff, there are a couple of points where it's got some really cool things, and I think is a definitive take on the DC universe. Not the definitive take, but a definitive take. And to me, that's kind of sort of the version of the characters they use in like Scooby-Doo Team-Up and such. And I would absolutely have established this as one of the used worlds of the multiverse. Because I think there's a certain amount of take that simpler Saturday morning take on the characters, and having that Batman team up with the main Batman. Because I think the main Batman would be a little envious of just how much simpler that guy's world is. He seems happy. Why can't I be happy, sort of a thing, you know?
That's awesome. But, yeah. Well, back to reality. Hawkman found number one. The art was pretty good, and it was an okay story. But doggone it, it was also not really something that I would recommend to anyone. It wasn't in a very small niche of Hawkman fandom, and it's kind of a throwaway. So for me, that's going to be a C-.
If it had been anybody other than Hitch, almost on the art, I'd probably be right there with you, maybe even a little lower. But to me, it's completely forgettable, but it had really nice art. But the bottom line is it didn't move the needle at all for me. So I'm going with a flat C. It's there. If you are a Hawkman fan, you already got this. If you are not, you do not need to get this. And I hate to say that, because again, some of the Hitch art, kind of good. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is Thanos number 14. And this is one of those where, you know, it's kind of funny. Some weeks there's some definite similarities in some of the books we pick. And this is another one where I thought it was a decent issue, but there just wasn't much there. I would split this story into kind of two parts. There's the part at the beginning where it's just kind of the backstory on Thanos and kind of who he is, where he is, in case you've slept through, I don't know, the previous 13 issues and Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, Infinity this, that, and the other, and the previous couple of Thanos series, or let's see, Infinity Watch, and or, you know, any of those sorts of things. It's not like Thanos is an obscure character. But if you don't know who he is, here's a splash page that will cryptically give you the highlights. And then the rest of the issue.
A beautiful splash page. Jeff Shaw's art is fantastic.
True. And I would say not only is the art itself, but the layout was really kind of cool. You know, where it's got him in the middle and then him facing off with Adam Warlock. It was, as far as this sort of a splash goes, it was one that I felt was a bit inspired without being, oh my God, they're showing off. But the rest of the issue was basically old Thanos recruiting young Thanos. And young Thanos kind of being young Thanos and having none of it and fighting back because, well, he's Thanos. And that's about it. It again, what we got isn't bad. It was an acceptable read. But I got to the end of this thinking, that's it?
Huh. I really dug this. I thought art was fantastic. The groundwork had been laid. in the previous issue when Donny Cates had taken over the writing chores and introduced the Cosmic Ghost Rider, who is a really cool character, someone really to give a little bit of comic relief to a normally serious character, or at least seemingly serious character. So that was a lot of fun. I like the back and forth, young Thanos, old Thanos. It was very reminiscent of young and old Thor, the Jason Aaron in Jason Aaron's run. So that's worked for me, and maybe I'm kind of in the bag for that, but I kind of like that older version of oneself to help the younger version of oneself to get from point A to point B. I kind of like that story.
I see that, but I think between the take on Thor with that we got not too long ago, and what we've gotten over in Old Man Logan recently with Maestro and Hulk, I feel they've hit that chord a couple of times, and this felt derivative because of that.
Well, that would be an editorial prerogative, and as we have discovered, sometimes the editors seem to be asleep at the wheel and don't know how to do their job.
And it's funny because this may be part of the storyline that is why Starlin left. I don't know if it is, but he had referenced a story in Thanos.
Yeah,
that was too similar, or whatever, to what he was going to be doing.
It's funny. Greg Pak said, got a question on Twitter and said, "Well, when you're working for Marvel and you're taking on this character, do they give you this rule book about who the character is and what you can do with him and what some of the things that you can't do and you know a guidelines and things like that?" And Greg Pak said, "No." You read as much as you can, and you rely on your editors.
Well, it's funny because I know that to be true, but it also, again, editor to editor. I mean, at one point, bazillion years ago, I did a blind submission for a Batman story. And one of the many, many, many reasons it was rejected was, oh, we have other plans for this character you're using. And granted, that was a character that literally happened to be in one panel of the story, just as a almost a reaction shot sort of a deal. But that particular editor knew what he had in flight and said, no, I don't want that to possibly conflict. And I think he was also just looking for, you know, hey, this is a nobody amateur creator. You know, we're not going to do this anyways. And I don't say that was a wrong decision either. But it comes down to TV shows that are also kind of sort of a shared universe, sometimes across shows, sometimes not. They have writer Bibles. They have this is who the character is. Not to a crazy detailed degree in all cases, and sometimes not even in most cases. But if you were to write for, say, a Star Trek show, they would have a Bible. Now, whether you could get access to it or not depends on your relationship to them or whatever. But if they're like, hey, we want you to write, odds are you'd get a copy of this Bible and you'd get a sense of, oh, Data's like this, Picard's like that, Worf is like this. Oh, it's called a turbolift, not an elevator. Good to know.
You couldn't come in and say, Picard has always been a Klingon. And he is actually working for them and he's deep undercover. You couldn't do that.
Or have Picard walk onto the bridge, Wesley walk on, Picard smack Wesley upside the head and say, get off the bridge, you kid, you know, or whatever. They wouldn't act that wildly out of character. Whereas in comics, hey, sometimes new creative team, all bets are off.
All bets are off.
With this this new Ghost Rider character they established, have they given him a name?
Not yet.
I want his first name to be Michael.
Okay.
And you're like, why? Why? Because they're that scene where finally the two Thanoses, you know, it's clear what old Thanos wants. He wants help. And there's this great shot. And again, this goes back to the artist doing a terrific job. He has been holding this Ghost Rider, Herald or whatever, up by his flaming head, and he just drops him. There's a certain drop the mic aspect to that I just think would be funny.
Okay. That was a long way to go for that. Okay.
It was worth it for me.
I got you. Sometimes you just entertain yourself, and that's fine.
Somebody has to.
Yes. Yeah. I think the art's fantastic in this. I think Donny Cates is writing for the trade probably, but he's leaving enough there's enough meat on the bone for the single issues to matter to me. I really like the characters in here, and the way that they are written, they're engaging. I care about them, even though Thanos is a horrible murderer. I like him, and that's weird. And I like Cosmic Ghost Rider. I want to see more of them. Each issue makes me excited for the next issue. I think that's so rare. Sometimes I read out of habit, and not because there's anything on that the page of that issue that made me want to read again. So I love it when the issue does its job and makes me want to read it more. And I think that this issue did that. And it's just tons of fun stuff in here. I'm really excited about it. The writing, the art, they work really well together. And who knew I would be reading a Thanos book?
I guess for me, it was good. I didn't think it was that good. It was entertaining, but it felt light. And some of the things that I think are clicking with you a lot more with me, I, again, felt some of that was derivative. And I felt, while what we got was good, it was too little for, you know, mm-hmm. an issue. I didn't feel like we really made much progress from kind of where we'd left off last time. And again, the recap kind of puzzled me a little in so much as we're 14 issues in on a Thanos series. Should they not know this? But it also comes down to I've read all the stories that they're referencing, I think.
But we have a new creative team, so it's like an issue one to me.
Well, it's like an issue 14 to me.
Right. And see, that's the difference. When I allow the new, when new creators take over, I allow it to be a fresh start. And I'm hoping for a fresh start.
I'm willing to a fresh start to the story, but almost a fresh start to the series is what kind of got me on this. They almost went back to Once Upon a Time, if you will. But I can see where you're coming from on that. I think you're a bit more charitable on that than I am.
Well, I am with this one. I mean, I might not be with the next one that I'm a little more invested in. Having not enjoyed the previous 12 issues before Donny Cates took over and dropped the book, I don't have that history with this title. So for me, this is great. I'm giving it an A-. I think if you haven't read Thanos and can pick 13 up off the rack, it's a really good sample, 13 and 14, to give you an idea of whether this is going to be for you. I wouldn't bother with those first 12. And maybe if you are already heavy into the Thanos series, it might not work as well, but it sure worked for me.
To me, it's not a matter of being heavy into the Thanos series, but I felt they were recapping major milestones of the Marvel Universe, and I freely concede that this is an aspect of me being a really longtime reader of the Marvel Universe and remembering getting off the shelf Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity Quest, Infinity this, that, and the other back in the 90s and stuff like that, whereas there are other people who might not even have been around back then, much less have read that stuff. So I get there's a need for some of this. It just felt like between the recap and the old Thanos taking the rest of the issue to say, hey, I need some help, I didn't feel like I got anything new out of it.
Right. But I can definitely see that there's a little decompression there.
For me, it was more than a little, but I'm glad you enjoyed it more than I did. I'm going with a C+ on this. Certainly, I do think this is better than what we had been getting earlier in the series. But I think there are also better books by Marvel to be getting. But Thanos is a major villain of the Marvel Universe, like on a Doctor Doom, Red Skull kind of a level. It's a character worth knowing about, if nothing else, because of the impact it's having on the movies and stuff. Anything else on that one, or move on to our other book?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, this is Bonehead number 1. This is from Image Comics. I will be honest and say this didn't even hit my radar during the solicitation cycle. When you're like, hey, we should do this, I'm like, do what title?
Yeah.
But, you know, I looked up the solicit.
Let's not blame me entirely. It's just a recommendation of many recommendations I made that week. And I don't know if I want to take complete credit for this book.
Seriously? You don't? Okay. Well, I was going to say that I looked at it, and it's like, this is actually a nice-looking cover. The art seems decent.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find some nice things to say, but
I frankly, really enjoyed this issue. I think the lead character is fairly cryptic. He doesn't really say anything. He's got a full face mask, so I don't know who the hell he is or what his motive is. But there is an aspect of this where I got enough of a sense of the world, tangential though it may be. There's a lot more to explore. And the motivation he had was more kind of an in the moment, but the world intrigued me enough that I'm going to give it a chance to, you know, earn a place on my pull list, give it a couple issues or whatever. I've already, sent the email saying, hey, please add this. Because I thought the art was good, I thought the story was entertaining enough. I've got questions as to what are the gladiators, why are these guys doing it, what is he training for, or getting an opportunity to go do it. I've got a lot of unknowns, but they were unknowns in a good way versus I really felt I should have been told more or something. To me, it was a bizarre mashup of like a kind of a VR futuristic parkour world in Spider-Man or some such.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was leaning. You know, there was I just felt like maybe there's a video game that this thing is based on that I'd missed in the solicitation, or this is, you know, inspired by some kind of parkour YouTube series or something. And there was an awful lot of action in here, jumping from building to drone and climbing up walls. And I'm sure that's impressive too, and people enjoy that, but I'm not one of those people that get a lot out of that sort of stuff in my comics. So the characters were interchangeable. I don't know who's who. There are maybe two sets of bad guys, or there's good guys, bad guys, and middle guys. Maybe, I don't know. That was kind of confusing on who's who as far as who to root for and who to root against. Machine 56 was this clever little thing that was the creation of this comic and is also, I guess, the guy's helmet is also Machine 56. I don't know. It's super futuristic for futuristic sake. It's got, you know, some decent art, a lot of action, not a lot of substance to it. And I don't think I'll be reading any more of these.
It's interesting because I felt it had more substance than, say, like that Hawkman found we just talked about. I agree that there's a lot of unknowns, and there's a lot of things just kind of partialed out as to, oh, he's got a jailbroken VR thing. I wonder what that means. But there's things for them. They're planting seeds for them to come back to, hopefully, or to flesh out as, you know, I wouldn't expect the entire world to be crystal clear and transparent at the end of a first issue. This had enough where it's like, okay, to me, this 56 character is our lead character. I am curious what happens about him. I'm not going to say I care about him because I still don't really know him.
Did he speak?
Don't think so.
No, don't think so.
He had a couple of word balloons that had the ellipsis. I've yet to figure out how to correctly read that. Because it's not a or whatever, because you could actually put words there, or, you know, HMM or whatever, you know, kind of a deal. So even though he doesn't speak, he does things. He shows a sense of personality, whereas I thought Hawkman kind of lacked that entirely in many parts. They've got an interesting world that I want to explore a little further. I thought this was fun and entertaining enough for me to come back. I didn't get bored reading it, whereas other things I have. And I found this much more memorable than, say, that Hawkman found issue we talked about.
Yeah, I definitely liked it more than Hawkman. Nowhere near as much as Thanos, though. I mean, so it's somewhere in the middle.
That's fair. And for me, I liked it better than both, because I thought things happened in this. Now, whether we know what they mean and whether they're of uber importance or not, I felt I got more story or more nuggets or more substance or something in this than in either of the other two. But I'm more, you know, intrigued by the parkour stuff or the VR stuff than maybe you are or whatever. So maybe this is just a little bit more up my alley than yours. For me though, this is something that I'm going to go with a B+. Like I said, I've sent in the email saying, hey, I want a print copy of this in the next two to see where it goes. Now, it could be I get those next two and say, you know what? There's really not much here and I leave it. Or, hey, I love it. Let's keep getting it. Don't know.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go with a B+. Or, no, B minus. I'm gonna go with a B minus. The sirens in the background are not people coming to take me away from my poor grades. So I don't know if you can hear that or not. But,
I can. I was wondering.
The rating police
is coming after you.
The review police are coming, and they didn't like it. So, but yeah, I'm gonna go with a B minus. And there's something in here, but I don't. It's not for me. It's not for me. It does have a lot of nice visuals to it, but it's got to be something that that appeals to you, and it just doesn't appeal to me.
Well, yeah, because something could be great, but not for you, and there's nothing wrong with that. I felt that way about certain things. This isn't connecting with me. I mean, to me, that's how I feel about a lot of Jeff Lemire's work. It's like I just don't care about the story he's telling, whether it's well told or not. Sometimes, if it's a story's well told, I may care about it less because I'm not into that kind of story. So I'm curious, like I said, where this goes and what happens with it, and we'll find out. Now, since we last recorded, we're recording this on a Thursday. Normally we do Tuesday, so it's been a little over a week. I've read a lot of comics. This is one of the first time in this probably at least 6 months, probably longer that I can recall, possibly better part of a year, where I can actually say I've got no unread new comics right now. I am current. I am good. So I read somewhere between 200 and 222 or so last week.
Congrats.
And that was part of what was factoring in on some of this is I'll read a lot of comics and it's like, you know what? Not much happened here. Or particularly if it's in short succession of having read one where it's like, geez, quite a bit happened in this. I'd forgotten you could fit this much story into this few pages or something. And that I think was definitely weighing in when I was reading Hawkman and Thanos. And also part of what I enjoyed with this, with Bonehead is it was a new world to go explore and it was intriguing. But yeah, I plowed through a ton of books, there at the end of the year.
Just in time. That's awesome.
Barely in time. But yeah, it was, it's nice to be caught up. I'm gonna try to do the same kind of charting and stuff over the course of 2018 as I was doing after I got behind, just to hopefully not get as far behind, although I'm certain I will get that far behind again. It just kind of happens at times. But yeah, there is a ton of comics coming out these days.
So you read 220 in about a week?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Jesus. That's a lot. That's a lot of comics.
Within a 7-day period, I read at least 200 comics, yes.
Yeah. That's crazy. They had to blur together a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, part of why I found Hawkman so forgettable.
Yeah.
Is you get that many narrative universes kind of going in and out of your brain. And it's funny because when I was really far behind, it was easier to read because if I'm doing, like a 7 issues or something of a title, I get into the world, I read, issue, I'm done. But 7 equivalent issues of 7, you know, each one of 7 different titles, get in, where did I leave off, what's going on, okay, I'm back into the world, up, oh, out, next, you know, and the context switching.
Yeah.
There's a drain for me on that.
Do you recall the DC holiday special?
Yes, I do.
Did you enjoy that?
Bits and pieces, some more than others.
I very much enjoyed the Sergeant Rock, Tom King, and Francisco Francavilla.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really awesome. And the first Sergeant Rock we've seen in a while, correct?
In a while. And I thought it was, I took it as kind of a fun riff on like the Hanukkah, you know, the candle doesn't die kind of a deal or whatever.
Yeah.
And that probably was cool. One of the better riffs on that I've seen in a holiday special.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Now that you've read a second Doomsday Clock and I think, 4 issues of Metal, how are they working for you?
Doomsday Clock number 2, going into it knowing it's essentially Watchmen 2.0 or whatever, worked a little bit better, but this was one where now we're spending a little more time on the DC world, so we're not getting as much as that. There are still parts of it that feel like a little bit of a slow burn. I really don't feel that we've had the two sides kind of start to clash or whatever. I'm looking towards that for the third issue, of course. But I had better expectations going in, so it worked better. But I felt the first issue was a denser, better story, just not the one I was expecting. This is starting to get more like I was expecting, but it didn't feel as substantial. It was close. It was still a fuller, deeper comic than most.
Gotcha.
As for Metal, that one's losing momentum for me.
Isn't it? I'm feeling the same way.
the whole bit with Hawkman's back. Well, okay. And it's like, have we suddenly just dropped what's going on with the various Batman and stuff? It didn't even seem to be a big deal for a bit. Now, not so much. It just, and some of that's perception, I think, for me.
A little convoluted.
A lot convoluted, and the momentum just, and the pacing of it between issues and tie-ins isn't good.
Yeah. Yeah. Did Moon Knight work for you a little better as Moon Knight was actually introduced in his book?
Certainly that helped. They're doing a decent take on he's schizophrenic but dealing with it.
Yeah.
Which is not my favorite take on the character, but it's viable, it's fun, it's good. And certainly having him in the book helps. Yeah. Likewise with Doctor Strange, having him in his book, that helps. And there are times I wonder where Marvel is going with some of their titles, but it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Like a couple of them have been totally derailed. Cavandi Challenge finished up. Did it stick the landing for you?
No.
Yeah, that last issue, was that where it lost you, or were you having problems with it up until then?
I was having problems with it off and on, and I was as much frustrated sometimes with the letters page or text page as with anything else.
Yeah, they seem to have abandoned what I thought the whole conceit was.
Yeah,
I'm going to put him in a bind, and I'm going to tell you how I would have gotten him out, and then we're going to talk about how you did it.
Yeah.
That was fun. And that happened, what, twice?
Maybe three times, maybe not. Maybe three times?
Yeah.
I want to call out Paul Levitz for coming in at the end there to tie it all together after Len Wein passed away or was hospitalized.
The homage to Len was very nice. And I don't want to ruin it if you haven't seen it yet. But yeah, it was a bit schmaltzy and not what I wanted for the end.
No, but I think Paul Levitz, one, coming in at the last minute and finishing it off was a nice move, nice gesture for him to do that. He's a great writer, and I thought, given the situation, I would be hard pressed to see how the story would have gone almost any other way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Again, wasn't what I was looking for, wasn't what I was expecting, but for me, that was happening on an issue-to-issue basis, because it's a rotating creative team. It's supposed to be a little, you know, bit of a swervy, sharp turn kind of a story.
And I don't know what Paul Levitz's role was in the original challenge, but he was the only surviving member from that first challenge to be a participant in this one, which I thought was both sad and nice.
Well, when he says surviving, it's not like all the others have died. He was the only one who was in that's on this. I think many of the others are still around living and potentially could have been involved. I'd have to double check that. I could be.
Oh, I thought they were all dead.
I don't think so.
Okay.
you had 12 writers, 12 creators. I'm pretty sure like Giffen was probably one of them. I'd have to go look up the credits for the original one. I would be shocked if he is the only living person from that creative team. I would be, matter of fact, completely flabbergasted, because I'm pretty sure Mark Evanier was one of them. I'd have to double check.
Okay. I took him for his word, or maybe I misinterpreted what he meant.
I took what he meant as the only person to have worked on both.
Yeah.
And survived the experience, not literally be still living.
Yes. I was super excited for the new story arc of The Beauty, which I know you don't read, but it centers around podcasters.
Mm.
And I just, of course, assumed it was our podcast. It was not. It was a serial NPR style podcast that is going to be the thrust of that the next story arc, which is okay. I guess they're good too. But Weekly Comic Spotlight is not featured in The Beauty like I was hoping.
I'm dropping. I'm boycotting. I'm kidding. I'm not surprised. If somebody were to do a comic based on this podcast, that would certainly get me to read it. No doubt about that. At least the first issue.
You'd sample it.
I honestly don't know how enthralling of a comic book that would be. But, you know, it's got me thinking I should do a comic on podcasting that's simply, you know, it's like a six-panel grid kind of a deal. Or maybe it's a nine-panel, whatever. But the far left panel would be one guy in his place, you know, at his computer talking.
Yep.
The far right would be another person on or whatever, and maybe the middle is somebody later listening or something.
How about a double page spread on our emails back and forth on what the next show's going to be?
I just think a literally talking head sort of a comic like that.
Yeah.
Would an
8-pager
would be hilarious, but not in the best of ways. So let's see. Coming up, we've got the teleconference on January 13th. That's a Saturday. We're doing that at 7 p.m. Central Time. Hop on Skype. Please post on the forum if you're going to attend, just so I can know and plan accordingly. We talk about whatever we talk about. Sometimes it's comics, sometimes it's movies, sometimes it's sci-fi novels or what have you. The topic, like I said, fluctuates, and that'll be after the yearly comic spotlight's up. So if you have thoughts on, you know, what people said or whatever, it's a great time to discuss it. Then the preview spotlight deadline is going to be Saturday, February 9th. That's bright and early that morning, or at least as early as I get up. And please send in clips, support the comics you love. It's a great way to share, you know, what comics, are out there that you enjoy, explain why you like them, and help people who are into that kind of a thing find it. Not everything is for everybody, and this is kind of our matchmaking service to get the right readers for the right books. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles number 1 from DC, Guardians of the Galaxy number 150 from Marvel, and Quarry's War number 2 from Titan Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.